All right, so this is Dr. Ilana Yerkowitz. I'm super excited to have her sitting across from me on a Zoom because she just recently published a book that I have in front of me called Fragmented. And can you want to introduce yourself and tell everybody who's listening, about, well, introduce yourself first.
Sure. So I'm Ilana Yerkowitz. I'm a clinician at Stanford University. I practice primary care and oncology. And yeah, that's me with makeup. I've also been a science and medical journalist for the past 10 plus years, combining a career in medicine and a career in writing. And so I've written many articles. This is my first book. I wrote the book Fragmented, A Doctor's Quest to Piece Together American Healthcare, which just came out. Well, just depending on when you're watching this, it came out in July of 2023. And it is a book that makes the case that fragmentation, or what I define as the insertion of gaps into a patient's story by design, is the root cause of our healthcare system's failings.
There is so much that I want to ask you off the cuff. There is just so much that I want to ask. So I am holding it here. And just that word is like so descriptive and such a good description, in my opinion, of the healthcare system. I'm not sure everybody would agree with us. I guess that's maybe the first question I have for you is, do you think that the majority of doctors would agree that healthcare is fragmented?
I do. I think the word that's most commonly used is broken. And I wrote the book in part to be more specific about it. I think it has become a cliche at this point to say that healthcare is broken, but without nailing down the specifics of where those breaks are and what those breaks are, we can't really make meaningful progress towards solutions. And so while I agree that healthcare is broken, broken as a big umbrella, I think more specifically, it is fragmented. And again, what I mean by that is that a patient's narrative is divided into these discrete bits and pieces, such that doctors and other healthcare workers are constantly working in a state of being partially blindfolded to the full patient narrative. And so we are grasping for data that gets lost in an electronic ecosystem. We are grasping for data that gets lost in faxes between different facilities. And then we are grasping for continuity with patients that maybe see us one time for a consult or see us in the hospital, and then we can't follow up with them when they get discharged. And so I wrote this book to kind of lay out exactly how healthcare is broken, because my thesis is that it is fragmented and there are multiple ways that this happens.
You were talking about the cliche of the word broken, and I feel like the word burnout is also a bit overused, not because it's not true. I do feel like we are burning out, but I feel like we're almost using it so much that we're, as a society, becoming a little bit desensitized to it. Do you feel that the fragmented system and the burnout that we're feeling as physicians, do you think that they're related?
100%. So I cite data in the book that says that, it's almost half of doctors report being burned out.
Yeah.
And survey upon survey shows that the number one reason, the number one source of physician burnout is bureaucratic tasks. Now, what are these bureaucratic tasks? They're often putting the pieces together of a fragmented system. So it's wrangling with the electronic medical records that are very confusing and scattered. It's wrangling with the different players in a healthcare system that includes not only other providers, but third parties like insurance companies. And it's doing the work of trying to piece together this behemoth of a system so that you can help the patient in front of you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I so identify with what you're saying as a primary care physician that no longer practices clinically, in part because the system's fragmented. And I honestly just could not deal with that. And I was lucky enough to be able to step back, although I'm working just as hard to build up my own venture now in order to make a dent in the system. I'm just quickly looking at. I was going to ask you if you can just give one big summaries of why it's broken, but then I thought to myself, let me look at the chapters and the way you broke the book down. And conveniently, there's three big parts: the big data, which is further broken down into paper trails, who owns the story, making computers work for us. And then there's part two, which is lost to follow-up. Are you my doctor? 28 hours in hell, reinventing primary care. And then there's a part three, the stories we tell ourselves, which is further broken down into these things happen, the likeliest, unlikely, and fixing fragmentation together. Can you talk a little bit about how you decided to split that up?
Yes. So I broke it down into three sections because I believe those are the three big categories of how healthcare is fragmented. So to speak a little bit more about each one, the first part is on data. And so I explore through three chapters about data. One, how data gets fragmented between different healthcare facilities. So when a patient transfers maybe from one doctor's office, even to one just up the street, their data is often not transferred with them. And we rely on this patchwork of things like faxes and old-fashioned methods just to get that story across. Data is also fragmented within one system. And I talk about electronic medical records and how they're organized. And so even if you have all of a patient's data within your system, you are still clicking through dozens of different tabs, trying to piece it together into a meaningful narrative. And so I discuss how electronic medical records don't make this easy. And then finally, in terms of data, I devote a whole chapter on who owns the story, meaning is it whose responsibility is it essentially to do all of this work? Should it be the physician? Should it be support staff? Should it be the patient? And I think that divide, is bound to provoke disagreement. And people feel very differently about the onus that should be placed on the patient in navigating their own care and putting the pieces of their data together. So that's part one. I talk about all the different ways that data, healthcare data, is fragmented. So it's not a story, a healthcare story. Part two, I called it lost to follow up because the next piece of fragmentation is the fragmentation of relationship between doctor and patient. I feel like this is the crux of good medicine. I think most physicians would agree with that. Very little of medicine can actually, you can't accomplish all that much in a one and done. So that is kind of the basis of this section. You need to be able, as a physician, you need to be able to see your patients. And as a patient, you need to be able to see not just any physician, but ideally the same physician who knows your story and sees you over time and adapts to changes that happen in your healthcare story. And so the second part dives into the barriers that break up this continuity between a doctor and a patient, that break up this relationship. One is how our insurance system is set up and how insurance tends to reimburse actually for new patients more than follow-ups, basically just deprioritizing that follow-up with the same physician that knows them. And so there's an entire chapter on a man who comes from China actually to visit family and falls through the insurance system completely and is unable to get follow-up. I believe another barrier here is, it sounds very, very mundane, but it actually isn't, which is scheduling. So how we schedule doctors' shifts can make or break continuity. And so I devote an entire chapter to an example of that, which is 28-hour shifts, which are a fixture in medicine. And I make the case that these are very, very problematic, but not for the reasons that people usually talk about, not for exhaustion and how decision-making is impaired when you're tired. All of that is very, very true. But actually, 28-hour shifts break up continuity because we're trading continuity for days for continuity over hours. And you end up with this revolving cast of different primary physicians every single day when patients are critically ill, such as in the ICU. And then the third chapter in the second section is about primary care and how primary care is designed in this country. And I devote an entire chapter to that because primary care, I believe in theory, is the antidote to this fragmentation, right? Like you have one physician, ideally, taking care of a patient population that she knows well. And I talk about barriers from within primary care. This is the section where you gave me a wonderful quote, and how primary care often fragments visits into these infrequent office visits, rather than having that seamless continuity and communication and how we can kind of get past that. And then finally, the third section is about medical culture and mindsets. And it's about, so, you know, the first two sections I would say are about external barriers of fragmentation that are imposed on people working in the system. The third part is actually about mindsets that, you know, it's biases that we can succumb to ourselves without placing any blame on individuals. So it's about biases that we're trained, you know, essentially to look at a snapshot in time rather than a patient's full medical narrative. And it's about biases that happen when we work in teams where everybody is so specialized that people are looking at just one slice of a patient's story and what happens when those stories do or do not come together.
Wow. So as a primary care doctor, again, formerly practicing, I so identify with everything you just said. The continuity in patient care is so lacking, and you touched on the meddling by insurance companies and the lower reimbursements for follow-up visits as compared to new patient visits. And I really want listeners to let that sink in, right? To let that sink in, because at the end of the day, it matters how we compensate our hardworking doctors. Mm-hmm. And if you're compensating someone much more for seeing a new patient and much less for following up a patient, then it indirectly, you know, deprioritizes that follow-up care, and you really get lost as the patient. And it's easy to put the onus on the doctor, but it's really the insurance companies that are controlling the joysticks. What do you think about the fact that we are front-facing as physicians, and so a lot of the blame gets put on us?
The book was a response to that. I mean, no, I'm being a bit facetious, but I try to really draw the curtain back in the book so that people understand that we are good people in a broken system or in a fragmented system. I think most people go into medicine for good reasons. I think most people in medicine are really trying to do their best, but they are trying to do their best with barriers that are placed upon them from the outside that make it really, really difficult. And so, for example, patients frequently would come up to me when I didn't know the full details of their story, and they go, "Didn't you read my chart?" Or, "That's all in my chart."
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's a book. And
it's a book. It's a book, and it's a book with pages ripped out. It's a book with pages shuffled out of order, and then pages that are coming in via fax maybe weeks later. And so I wrote this to show what happens behind the scenes, because I believe we are actually all victims in this system. Like, there's no winners. Patients are losing. Patients are the biggest victims. They're losing because they are the ones who then bear the full responsibility for advocating for themselves.
Right.
But healthcare workers are also victims. And like we talked about earlier, this is a big reason that people are burning out and leaving traditional medical practices, because they feel trapped in a system that they can't do their best.
We'll be right back.
SomiDocs is proud to introduce Dr. Side Ventures, a new interactive Facebook group bringing doctors from across the world into one interactive space. Some of our latest discussions include revenue models for private practices, the side hustles we're growing, malpractice needed in today's world, doctor finances, how much doctor services like CPAs and lawyers charge, and more. Join us at facebook.com/groups/sideventures.
Right. I can so identify with that. When a patient comes in and they just think, understandably, because we're all patients too, doctors make patients also. So understandably, you go to a doctor's visit thinking that they know all about you. And even if they don't know you, well, my records were sent over. But even the fact that an electronic medical record is now being set into place where we have to like click all these buttons and even fill out all of these questions that are usually not relevant to the visit, that creates a visit where, for example, if you came in just for a cold or just for a UTI, for a urinary tract infection, or something that's fairly simple in medical terms, it will generate like 10 pages of the visit with questions all over the place. And it makes a medical record that really is like a book when you're really just coming in for something that's simple. And it gets a million times worse when someone is complex and complicated, or medical mysteries or chronic illnesses. So, just for those people that are listening out there that make patients, I hope that you can understand the person on the other side is sometimes struggling too because they just can't read your book in the 10 minutes. And I mean, not, I don't mean this wonderful book, I mean your medical records book in the 10 minutes that were allotted.
The medical records book that, again, I would just emphasize, is not written with a clear beginning, middle, and end. It is, I worked really hard on my book and how to organize the chapters and how to make it flow, right? An electronic medical history is not like that at all. Again, it's like with the book, with pages being just ripped out and shuffled and out of order. And thanks to external incentives of insurance companies, yeah, we get 10 to 15, physicians often get 10 to 15 minutes, not just to do the visit, but then to do all the work of putting gluing the pieces of the book together and then reading it. And so that's why physicians will turn to patients and ask them, they will ask them key parts of their medical history, and then patients will kind of shrug and be like, it's all in there. And that's what we need to solve.
And then you have the specialists that come in and they focus only on their field, understandably. And that's not only enticing for a medical student to seek out, right? A career in a more specialized field, because they can then sort of not have to deal with the books and they could just deal with like a section of the patient's condition, right? I'm going to be a cardiologist because I'm just going to focus on the heart problem. It becomes easy for the specialist to say, well, go talk to your primary care doctor. But if nobody wants to be primary care doctors, then what's going to end up being we're seeing now is that everybody basically wants to specialize. And I'm not even talking about compensation, where nowadays procedures are what get compensated more than anything, whereas it should actually be the coaches, I call them. The primary care doctor is essentially a coach. They should ideally know your history. They should pull together all your records, and they should sort of start bringing in all of the advice that the specialists give.
Yes, in theory, that is what the primary care doctor should be doing, what patients are now doing for themselves. However, there was recently a study that came out that said if primary care doctors did everything they were tasked to do in a day, they would be working 26.7 hour days. So it's easy to say this should all be the primary care doctor's job. And I think in an ideal world, it would be. But that gets back to how we structure primary care, and primary care needs more support. We need more support from the technology that can be doing kind of a lot of the legwork that now we're doing manually. Primary care needs more support from support staff, who can be doing some of the work of putting the pieces together in a broken system and some of the bureaucratic work so that we have truly team-based outpatient care. And then primary care needs more time. The visits need to just be longer. So we need tech, team, and time, in order to do this work. And I see the appeal of why medical students are going into specialties. And I had a little bit of an atypical career. I mean, I went into a specialty and then I came back to primary care. It's usually the other direction, because I felt so strongly that primary care was the answer to so many of these issues that I saw patients facing. But I devote some time in the book kind of unpacking what happens to patients when they have all specialists and no leader, no quarterback, no one who's thinking about their full patient story. And the ironic thing and the scary thing actually is that every specialist can be thinking perfectly logically, like they are doing their job well. But if they're only thinking about a piece of the patient's narrative, no whole can ever take shape and bad outcomes can still happen.
Another quick question is, you're at Stanford. What does your healthcare system think about the book?
They've been very supportive. And so this book is not based on any one place. These are universal issues that every patient faces and every healthcare worker faces. And so, you know, while the stories might have just been taken from my experiences with patients at one institution, I've worked at other institutions, stories were taken from other institutions, and they've been supportive because these are systemic issues that affect everybody. And I think they are as invested as I am in trying to get to better solutions.
Yeah, and it makes me feel like this is similar in its goal, in you having written it, as Samuel Shem, Dr. Samuel Shem. His goal was when he wrote The House of God. And again, there's different people feel differently about The House of God because that's more satire, whereas yours is just straightforward. You know, this is what healthcare is. You're not playing games. But I feel like it's so interesting how different personalities and doctors come out to sort of express our pain to the world.
Yeah. I think there has to be an outlet somewhere. You need some outlet. And for me, journalism has been my outlet. It's a way to put on paper and to really just sit and think about, like, every time I went into work, you know, I faced fragmentation in some way, whether I was hovering over a fax machine, whether I was clicking through dozens of electronic tabs, whether I was fighting with insurance companies. But I didn't really have the language, you know, when I was just going in and feeling these problems, to capture what was going on. And so writing this book for me, I mean, it gave me the language, and my hope is that it gives everybody the language. So that, I mean, honestly, now when I go into work, I'm like, oh, I'm facing chapter three today, like the issues in chapter three, or today I'm facing chapter eight. And I think there's great value in organizing, exactly, and defining terms of exactly what's broken. And that's the only way we can make any headway together in fixing the problems.
So do you feel like there's hope?
That is a good question. I do. I do. So I think healthcare is, again, this big behemoth of a system. And I think there is some low-hanging fruit of fragmentation. And I think there are more complex problems that will involve many stakeholders to solve. And I intentionally devote time in the book to talking about both, because I think there are things that we can be doing right now. And, like, I'll give you an example. I think fixing the electronic medical records is a very complex problem. I do think there's hope. And I talk about quality improvement initiatives that often are spearheaded by physicians in fixing some of the problems that the electronic medical records are posing. But it is a complex problem because we have these multi-billion dollar software companies that, you know, you can't really start from scratch. Now, let's talk about scheduling. Can we eradicate 28-hour shifts right now? Yes, like that is something that we can do. And that is something that many physicians actually have been advocating for us to do. I talk in the book about, you know, 5 decades of back and forth on what is an appropriate shift for a doctor. Should it be 16 hours or 24 hours or 28 hours? But I mean, the long and short of it is we can change that right now. The medical community can just decide residents will no longer do 28-hour shifts. That's actually an easy solution. And then, you know, the whole third section is about mentalities and biases and culture. And I think individuals can change their mindset, I hope, after reading the book and approach patient care in a more holistic way. Again, I say this without blaming any individuals, but to empower people to look for that bigger narrative. And so I think there are changes that can be made right now. I think the financial issues and the big tech companies are a little bit harder nuts to crack. But we are making progress. And I think I think there is hope that we can get to a place where patients are not the ones who are fully burdened with stitching the pieces of their own medical narrative together.